Hello, and welcome to Disney Rewind, a Disney nostalgia podcast served with a glass of wine. We are your hosts, Adina Winnett
and Rachel Seidman. In each episode, we break down a piece of Disney media and pair it perfectly with a glass of wine.
Disney Rewind is a member of the Disney Podcast family. Head over to @DisneyPodcastFamily on Instagram to see all the latest episodes and posts from our show and links to other great Disney podcasts.
Cheers.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, look at this. We're back, baby.
Ooh, it's been a minute. Rachel, what have you been up to in the last few moments of time since we were last here?
Just a couple things. We're going to do three highlights each of some things that have happened. So last you heard, I was getting ready to jet set my way over to the Philippines. So I did indeed spend about a month in the Philippines, which was absolutely insane and quite a treat. I know Adina's going to talk about this too, but in addition to that, I went to the Eras Tour with my parents and also with Adina on a separate occasion, but getting to go with my parents and making my outfits that I wore to the Eras Tour, I mean, so is kind of just like a dream come true, is having literally Taylor Swift see me in a costume from a music video, from a Taylor Swift music video, was like a mind-blowing experience. And I'm trying to think of something else. I mean, we did a lot. Oh, I'm also going to say that I went to Chicago, which was like such a fun trip, and getting to go and see my family and go to Chicago. And I went golfing in Wrigley Field, which is pretty insane to get that opportunity. So
I did an insane photo that you sent me.
Like, that was so much fun. But honestly, I've just been traveling all over. And guess what? I still haven't stopped traveling. Oh, this was my last one. I said Chicago. Sorry, we got one more because Eras Tour is shared. But I just got back from Hawaii a couple days ago. So that was pretty great as well. So me just kind of bouncing all around on an airplane. That's what's
yes. that was a lot. I will definitely start with the Eras Tour. That was insane. We got to go together and we were there for the last night of her US leg where she announced 1989 Taylor's version. Incredible. What yeah. an amazing concert.
Insane.
But this is not a Taylor Swift podcast. Adam and I, for our 2-year anniversary, spent 2 weeks in Japan, and that was the most amazing experience. We had so many good meals, all the sushi, all the ramen. It was just absolutely the best trip of my life.
Aww.
And yeah, it was so fun. And I will end with, we got to go to Sweethearts Night with our sweethearts.
Oh yeah, we
February.
Did that.
That was fun. We hadn't seen each other in a while before that. It had been 4 months since we had physically seen each other in person. So that was a very special way to do it at the happiest place on earth. But now that you're all caught up with our lives, I am very excited to finally be back and talking about our next movie, which, Rachel, take it away.
Awesome. So a couple things. First, I'm going to introduce our movie, but I am going to say, for you listeners out there, I want you all to know we're trying something new with this episode. We're using a new way to record. Hopefully that means we are getting a video aspect to this podcast, but that also might mean this is going to be a new learning curve for us. So I just want to preface all of this for us that we are trying something new starting with this episode. Since it's been such a long time, we're hoping to come back with a gift of video for all of you.
Yes. So you can see our beautiful faces. I actually had to do my hair, a little bit of makeup, you know, got to look nice for you guys.
Oh, I didn't try for you guys, just so you know.
Well,
I did
you look beautiful.
Different. Oh, thanks. Yeah. But without further ado, if you listened to the last episode before we went on our little hiatus, you already know that we today are talking about my pick of Cars, and I'm so excited for so many reasons to talk about this movie.
Such a great pick. I have so many wonderful things to say about it. I also have an issue with the entire Cars universe, but I think I'm going to try not to bring that up in this episode. But it is a delightful, delightful movie. So, Rachel, tell our listeners or viewers, depending on how this goes, what this is about.
Absolutely. So, Cars was written by Dan Fogelman, John Lasseter, Joe Ramph, Kiel Murphy, Phil Lauren, and Jorgen Klubian. Directed by John Lasseter and co-directed by Joe Ramph. We're going to talk about him a little bit later on, but it was released, it was premiered at the Lowe's Motor Speedway in North Carolina on May 26, 2006, and released in the U.S. on June 9, 2006. Now, one thing before we get into summaries, it was the final film independently produced by Pixar after its purchase by Disney in January 2006. So that's a pretty exciting thing. This kind of does hold a very special place in the world of Pixar because it was that last Pixar movie before moving into Disney Pixar.
Yes, now, that was on my list of firsts and lasts. I have some fun categories for facts later, but yes, now our summaries.
So, fun fact of the day. I do have our short Disney Plus summary and our long Disney Plus summary. And like I said, we're doing some things differently today. I did not write my own summary because I found that the Disney Plus summary actually is pretty dang good. I was impressed and speechless. Now, the first one, not so much, but the short Disney Plus synopsis is race car Lightning McQueen gets stranded in a small town on Route 66. Not ideal.
It's not wrong. It's not wrong, but not ideal.
Mm-hmm. Here is the longer one that I don't think I could have topped. Hotshot race car Lightning McQueen is living life in the fast lane until he hits a detour and gets stranded in Radiator Springs, a forgotten town on Route 66. There he meets Sally, Mater, Doc Hudson, and a heap of hilarious characters who help him discover there's more to life than trophies and fame. That's pretty dang good for a Disney Plus summary. I don't know that anything else I could have done would have topped that. It just would have been very similar sounding. So.
Fair.
I do not have my own Disney Plus summary for the day or my own summary for the day.
Wow. In the time we've been off, you were not hired by Disney Plus to write their summaries? That's weird.
Shh, maybe I was. Maybe that was a Rachel summary right there. They've listened to our podcast and they're like, that girl, come here and write our summaries.
That's really where we've been. Now, we are on to our wine, which was my pick for the day. I tried to find a wine that would have been somewhere near where this movie takes place. Very ambiguous. I don't quite know where it is. So I picked instead a wine that is at a winery located as a stop along Route 66. And that leads us to the Cuvée 89 by Gruet. It is a sparkling rosé. Here is a very quick tasting summary before I tell you a little bit more about it. An eloquent, sparkling rosé boasting floral aromas and ripe strawberry flavors finishes with a round, zesty acidity, best served with a slight chill. And I hope yours is chilled.
Absolutely it is.
So, Rachel, cheers.
Cheers, Adina. And to everyone, cheers.
Cheers.
I like that.
I like that too. Very light. I'm getting the strawberry heavily.
It's very strawberry.
It is a strong strawberry flavor.
Yeah.
And I would say it's a zesty acidity. Well done to whomever wrote the description of this wine.
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to do a little bit of research on wineries along Route 66. I found that there was somebody that already did this research for me. So I'm going to give my Amazing. I'm going to give props to Jill Weber. She has a blog called The Wining Archaeologist, W-I-N-I-N-G, Wining. Love it. Route 66, as we learn, used to serve as the major transit route between Chicago and L.A. So Jill in particular looked at the southwestern region, which is where this movie takes place, the majority of. So that southwestern run is from Amarillo, Texas, to LA. And the Southwest really does have a good climate and soils for this grape production. And winemakers have been coming here in more recent years. Like, obviously, we know Northern California, like Oregon, Washington, those areas are more known for wineries. But in more recent years, people have been going to the Southwest region. And in terms of comparable lands to this region, this 35th parallel crosses the northern tip of Africa, touching Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia, and then kind of goes up into the Greek island of Crete and kind of skirts the border of Syria and Turkey. So you're going to get wines that are similar tasting in those regions to the Southwest area of where we're drinking today. So these countries and this area have generally hot, dry climates or near a body of water at an altitude. And you would see this similarities in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. So that lands us at Gruet Winery in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I know I've not been to New Mexico. Rachel, I believe you have been to Albuquerque.
I have.
Oh, wonderful. So in Albuquerque, there is quite a bit of wine production. New Mexico in general bills itself as the United States' oldest wine-producing region. And just like in Texas, it was Franciscan friars who planted the first grapes in the mid-1600s. These were mission grapes and were planted along the Rio Grande River. The southern Rio Grande Valley proved difficult for grape growing, as production was devastated in the first half of the 20th century by a series of floods. So the rebirth of wine production was centered further north with cold, hardy grapes of French hybrid origin. Albuquerque is part of the state's central growing region and is in one of the state's three AVAs, or American Viticulture Area. And this means a specific type of appellation of origin used on wine labels. So an AVA is basically a delimited grape-growing region with specific geographic or climatic features that distinguish it from the surrounding regions and affect how grapes are grown.
To tie that into a previous episode, when we talked about Italian wines, we talked about the label that shows up of DOC, DOCG, etc. That is the Italian version of the AVA. It's kind of distinguishing where this wine is, and you can kind of get a distinct idea of the quality of wine depending on the region in Italy, but region of AVA that it's stating.
Look at you tying it back to past episodes. I'm so proud of you. So Gruet is a well-known winery in this New Mexico or the Middle Rio Grande Valley AVA. That is what this area is called. So Gilbert Gruet had a champagne business in Berthon, France, before he and his family made their way to Albuquerque. He moved to New Mexico in 1984 specifically to make wine. He planted Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, the same grapes that he was familiar with, in Champagne. Gruet's vineyards are in the town of Truth or Consequences at an elevation of 4,300 feet, making them some of the highest in the U.S. While still in the Rio Grande watershed, this location is just outside, slightly south, of the Middle Rio Grande AVA. But yes, in 1983, the Gruet family was traveling through the southwestern part of the U.S., and while they were in New Mexico, they met a group of European winemakers who had successfully planted vineyards in Engel, which is near the town of Truth or Consequences, about 170 miles south of Albuquerque. So after hearing of these vineyards that were planted there as early as the 1600s, as I mentioned, and learning about the specific climate and soil conditions, the Gruet family knew that they had found what they were looking for. So in 1984, he moved his family that had been very successful in Champagne since 1952 out to New Mexico, and they planted an experimental vineyard in Engel, New Mexico, and the plantings were exclusively Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, and then that is how our wine came to be. So I'm quite liking this rosé. It is very fun.
I will also say, now, you can interrupt me at any time. However, I have a couple of other reasons why this is a good wine. And I'm curious if there are any other reasons why you picked this wine for this episode, or I have some that I'm like, wow, this is a great wine for this episode. Do you have any others before I interrupt and give some reasons why this is a good wine?
I would love to hear your reasons first.
Great. First and foremost, I'm really glad that this is a sparkling rosé. We get the nod to the red of Lightning McQueen, which I did not know about. Okay, that was that was a good choice. And you had the choice between just a sparkling white versus sparkling rosé. Great choice. However, anyone, and we're going to talk about this in just a second, anyone who watches car racing knows one thing and one thing only. When that car crosses the finish line and you get your winners, what happens? Champagne. So I am so happy that we are having a sparkling wine today, because that is on brand with car racing. And I was hoping that we would have a sparkling for a car racing episode.
It just seemed like a celebratory episode, a celebratory movie. There are a lot of fun aspects to it, and you need an equally as fun wine. So
this is lovely.
Thanks. I'm quite pleased with it. And it was not expensive. Go pick yourself up a bottle. Yeah. And let's get into this movie.
So before we get into production and everything else, I kind of just want to say why I picked this movie, because this is a really special movie to me. So anyone who's known me since I was a kid has known that I like cars. Now, I just like looking at cars. I like watching cars. I like cars. My grandma would take me to the bookstore, and in between my Nancy Drew books that I would buy books about cars. I still have at my parents' house.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Cars that I bought. Oh, yeah. I would watch the show Top Gear with my brother. Shout out Jeremy Clarkson, who is a cameo in the UK version of this movie. And we would talk
about stealing my facts.
Oh, I'm sorry. These are things like I love this because, again, this movie is all about things I love. But we would watch Top Gear and we talk about, you know, if we were famous, how are we going to do our lap in our reasonably priced car? How are we going to be the star in the reasonably priced car if we're famous? We're not famous, so don't worry about that. But I still to this day, I'm like, how would I do that? And also, I think people know this. If you don't know this already, you're about to know. I'm a very big Formula One fan. I love Formula One so much so that we kind of have hinted to it. I've been to a race in Texas. I've been to the Austin Grand Prix, and I drove through on Route 40, which is what they show in this movie that takes away from Route 66. I drove that to go out to Texas. So all of the scenery, everything that we see there, I experienced all of that to go to my own car race. And so I just absolutely love racing. And so throughout this episode, I am going to be sharing racing facts. What's going on at the pit stop? What do the different color flags mean? Have you ever wondered why those cars are swerving back and forth? Why are they doing that? I will answer racing questions throughout this and talk about what they did right and what they did wrong in terms of racing in this movie.
Amazing, because I did not look into any of that, knowing that you would know.
Absolutely. I didn't even need to do half the research. I already just knew this stuff, but I fact checked. Well, but let's go ahead and get into production facts. Now, in my production facts, there's kind of two different origin stories of this movie, depending on who you ask. So I'm going to start. Oh, yeah, go for it, Adina.
Oh, I was going to go with way back when, and you mentioned one of our story writers, Mr. Jorgen Klubian. Perfect. I'm so sorry if I've butchered that. But development for cars started in 1998 after the production of A Bug's Life, and it was titled The Yellow Car, which was about an electric car living in a gas-guzzling world. So Jorgen, I'm not going to try to pronounce the rest of his name, he had developed the story during this production. He is a Pixar animator and artist at the time, and he was inspired by a real-life automotive history from his home country of Denmark. I have a quote from him. In the 80s, some enthusiastic folks got the idea of making a three-wheeled, one-person car that ran on electricity. They put it into production and it worked great in the city, but out on the highway was too slow. People also thought the car was ugly. I thought the electric car was ahead of its time, and it struck me as odd that my fellow Danes didn't agree. It reminded me of The Ugly Duckling by Hans Christian Andersen. This famous Danish character wasn't accepted at first, but in the end, it proved to be right on the money. This story was deemed too slight to carry an entire movie. But this small town setting remained an inspiration. And looking back, Rachel's going to talk about the other origin of this, but looking back, Jorgen said that this film, this kind of breaks my heart. He said that this film was both his best and most bitter experience because he was fired before it premiered and because that he felt that Lasseter wrote him out of the story of how the film got made. So I want to claim justice for Jorgen on this film. This was definitely his idea. And I, look, we have a lot of problems with John Lasseter. I don't go into a lot of that in my research. I decided we don't, if you want to do that research yourself, please, by all means, we're not going to talk too much about it. But what is the other origin story of Cars, yes, Rachel?
So we're going to talk about that John Lasseter origin story. John Lasseter tells a different story about how the inspiration to this film started. So he says that the inspiration for this film came after a cross-country road trip with his wife and five sons in the year 2000. When he returned to the studio after the vacation, he contacted Michael Wallace, who is a Route 66 historian. Wallace then led 11 Pixar animators in rented white Cadillacs on two different road trips across the route to research the film. So in 2001, the film's working title was Route 66 after, you know, Route 66. But the title was changed to Cars to avoid confusion with the 1960s TV show of the same name. Now, with that being said, Lasseter is basically ignoring that there was a movie about cars in the works. He absolutely is like, nah, 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 nah. I went on a drive and I thought, you know what sounds great? I want to talk about cars and I'm going to come up with this movie. So yeah, he absolutely did rewrite all of history.
And listen, it's okay to have a movie about cars, but like, you got to give credit where credit is due. Come on, bro.
Well, and so much so that like John Lasseter wanted this movie so much to be his. Like, I'm gonna overstep here, but whatever. So much so, Lightning McQueen's original number was supposed to be 57, which was a nod to John Lasseter's birth year. Like, John Lasseter, to him, this movie is his movie. But that got changed, obviously.
Thank goodness it did, because nopety nope nope.
I think that's baffling that he, again, John Lasseter as a person over here, we're not talking about that, but John Lasseter as a creator thinks so highly of himself that he came up with this idea. He's going to have the title character's number be created after him. This is his movie, when there was already an idea of having a Cars-based movie in the works that actually was supposed to come out, like, to your point, after Bug's Life, and it got scrapped and pushed for Toy Story 2. It got kicked down the line. So that's not Jorgen's fault at all. No. So
this is John Lasseter's toxic masculinity at its peak. Mm-hmm. Let's be real.
Mm-hmm. So that, I don't like that there's two different versions. I appreciate that Jorgen got screenwriting credit. Because he should, because he started this whole path of them having a movie about cars. But there is one other person who comes into all of this, and I'm not going to get too much into how he came to be the co-director, but I do think that this is an appropriate time for us to talk about Joe Rampt, who is the co-director of this movie. He is also a writer, as well as who the movie is dedicated to.
Oh, Joe. Sweet, sweet Joe.
This is a heartbreaking story that Joe actually passed away in a car accident during production of this movie. And Joe has been a very long-term Pixar cornerstone. He's been involved in many, many Pixar movies. This was not random that he was involved in this movie. And it is pretty tragic that he passed away during the production of this movie.
And I knew this and I still got the chills as you said that. Like, Joe has been in so many roles in Pixar lore, and you can see that during the dedication to him, all of the roles that he played in past Pixar movies. And it's just, it's so heartbreaking that he does not get to see his final film.
Yeah, that I it really shook me. I mean, we watch these movies all the way through the end, not just for any like special scenes or anything, but any movie we do, I watch through the credits. I'm reading the credits because I want to give anyone who worked on these movies their due. Even if we don't talk about them in the podcast, I want them to know that like I saw them. And so when that came up during the credits, I was just like, I can't hang with this right now.
Listeners, in case you did not know this, Joe voices the character of Red in this movie, the big red fire truck. And I'm skipping forward a little bit to After Facts, those are later, but his brother, Jerome, takes over the voice of Red in subsequent Cars movies. I think we should give a little cheers to Mr. Joe Ranft, because he is an iconic Pixar name. Let's take a drink. To Joe.
Okay, bring us back. Bring us back. I know. I was like, I brought us down.
I got this. Please, I got it. Okay. So, Rachel, you mentioned how the animators got to go on a little road trip with Michael Wallace. He also has a voice in the film. He is the voice of the sheriff. But he is a Route 66 historian. What an interesting job. I would love to hear about that.
So cool.
But he took these Pixar animators all around Route 66, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, and guided them through this area in white Cadillac. Could you imagine just like coming across that?
That would be
That is iconic.
Again, being on these roads, like you see no cars for stretches of time. You'll just be on the road. You can see for miles ahead and you see nobody else. So can you imagine you're driving through and all of a sudden you have all of the red rocks surrounding you. You have nature everywhere. And then there's just 11 Cadillacs, white Cadillacs that are just driving.
I would die. I would die.
I genuinely was picturing that. I was like, I can imagine what that experience would be like.
But you really get that experience in the animation of this film as they are driving specifically along Route 40, like that whole scene of Mac going through the country, like it's gorgeous. But then when you get to the city of Radiator Springs, there are some things that did inspire this area, particularly the Cozy Cone Motel. And you see the designs are obviously traffic cones, but these are based on the two wigwam motels along Route 66 in Holbrook, Arizona, and Rialto, California. These were once two out of seven motels with individual cabins shaped like teepees. And another motel from this chain survives in Cave City, Kentucky. And the name Cozy Cone was inspired, obviously it's a traffic cone, but it was inspired by the Cozy Dog Drive-In of Springfield, Illinois, which lays claim to being the birthplace of the corn dog.
That was too fun
of a fact not to share.
That is a fun fact. Tying into this fact, I do not have it written down anywhere, but I don't need to. In case you guys didn't know, San Luis Obispo actually had the very first motel ever. The very first motel is in San Luis Obispo, California, where I live, up the 101 just a little bit, right next to where it's not there anymore. The structure's there. It's right next to where the Apple Farm is. So if you look at the Apple Farm going north, there's a little structure right there. And that used to be the very first motel. The more you know.
Very interesting.
I don't have this written down either. When I went on my road trip, again, through to your point, capturing Highway 40 is it is to a T. Also, going through northern Arizona is incredibly beautiful. And when you see it in the movie, that is what it looks like in real life, similar to how they're able to translate. We're not going to talk about this really at all. Similar to how they're able to translate the movie into Cars Land at California Adventure, they translating the scenery into the movie. So all of these things are just being captured, and they look exactly the way that they look in real life. They're stylized, obviously, like Monument Valley, Ornament Valley. They're different, but they are capturing the essence of the area absolutely perfectly. So again, that road trip was completely worth it. John Lasseter's toxic masculinity aside, that road trip was absolutely worth it because they did capture it perfectly.
Oh, for sure. And that goes into insane animation.
Yeah.
So Cars was the first Pixar movie to utilize a technique known as ray tracing, which properly renders the way light passes through and collides with surfaces. So to put that in simpler terms, it enables the artists to accurately depict reflections without having to go through and paint them individually. Ray tracing takes up a massive amount of time and computer power. As a result, each frame, or about 1/24th of a second of this movie, took an average of 17 hours to render. Some frames took up to a week.
Holy crap.
The amount of work, the amount of manpower that went into making this movie as beautiful as it is, so many hours.
That's insane. That is absolutely, I mean, it paid off to what we were saying before. It paid off, but that is absolutely crazy.
Yes, it does pay off. This was the first movie to win the Golden Globe for Best Animated Film. And I appreciate that people giving out these awards were able to look at this movie and say, hey, you deserve some accolades here. Bravo.
Yeah, I saw that and I was curious if that award, not that it was created for this movie, but that people were recognizing, one, from the Golden Globes, to not have something for animation alone. It really makes it hard for animation to win. And at the Oscars, it was up against some really stiff competition, hence it losing to Happy Feet, which, like, come on. How can you not like Happy Feet? So, like, understandable, but I appreciate that, like, people still recognize, no, this is still a really good movie. So even though it's not winning, it deserves something because the work that went into it and creating this and everything that it is, it needed to win some awards.
Oh, for sure. The animators drew over 43,000 sketches for the designs of these cars here. Like, there was so much that went into making this movie what it is. And wow. I'm just baffled. I do have a section that I'm calling By the Numbers, in which I detail different numbers and random facts. I've shared a couple of them. Here are some others. The opening race that we see contained 60,000 seated cars and an additional 700 cars in the infield and aisles. The final race had 100,000 seated cars, plus an additional nearly 1,500 cars in the infield and aisles. There are nearly 13,000 cars entering the final race stadium. That's a lot of animated cars.
That is so many cars. That's insane. And I'm going to talk about later on what these places are representing and like how they built the stadiums and everything. But to imagine that there's tens of thousands of cars in any of these scenes that we see there, that's truly impressive.
There were also a total of exactly 21,566 lights in four different shots in the movie when Lightning McQueen and Mac first get on the road to drive to California.
Dang.
I know. That's a lot of animated lights.
just a couple. Just a couple lights.
Some other fun random numbers that I have here. This was the longest Pixar movie until Incredibles 2 surpassed it by a minute. However, without the credits, Incredibles 2 is an hour 49 minutes and Cars is an hour 52 minutes. So technically, this is the longest.
And this is a long movie. That was something that I noticed. It is. And not a bad way, but I was taking my notes and at one point I paused it. I'm like, okay, we probably have like 30 minutes left in this movie. I was like, oh gosh, there's still an hour left in this movie. Wow. And they need it. I don't think that anything needed to get cut, but I'm kind of used to movies being shorter. So I was expecting it to feel like an hour and a half. And it definitely feels like a 2-hour movie.
But also some fun facts about this particular movie. In its opening weekend, Cars earned $60 million in 3,985 theaters in the U.S., ranking number one at the box office. And for 3 years, it would hold the record for having the highest opening weekend for any car-oriented film until it was surpassed by Fast and Furious in 2009. So clearly, people who like cars will sit for longer movies.
I do have, kind of as we're in fun facts, I have some car facts about this movie.
Yay! Car facts!
You know, like, let's go. Show me the car fox. I have some car facts about this movie right here. So almost every car in the movie is designed with a specific car in mind for who the character is. And so we're going to start with Lightning McQueen, because Lightning McQueen actually is kind of a little weird car. I mean, as he should be as the main character, but he's a little weird car over here. Because he is a custom-built race car that, as John Lasseter put it, he's a hybrid between a stock car and a more curvaceous Le Mans endurance car. So we're going to talk, I have a lot about stock cars when I get into talking about NASCAR, but I'm going to say who the other stock cars in this movie are. So Strip the King Weathers, as voiced by Richard Petty, is accurately a 1970 Plymouth Superbird stock car. That is his car. That is the car that he drove, that he won in. You can see that car in a museum, that is his car, and it is accurately depicted in this movie.
That's super cool.
The same color, the same everything. That is his car. Chick Hicks, on the other hand, he is a generic 1980s stock car. And then we have Junior, who is Dale Earnhardt Jr., amazing. And again, he is a generic racing stock car. So the main racers in this movie are stock cars. To make things even better, Doc Hudson is a 1951 Hudson Hornet. And so true to the movie, which is really true to reality, the Hudson Hornet won in 1951, 1952, and 1953. That is accurate. When we see those piston cups, the Hudson Hornet won the NASCAR Cup in those years.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's and it was a crazy thing that it happened, because it showed that this car that was not aerodynamically built, that did not have a crazy engine, could win. And so again, it's very true to the character of Doc Hudson. It's based completely in the history of racing, which is,
I love that.
I was like, yes, Doc Hudson. Heck yes. We also have Michael Schumacher, which, oh my gosh. So he is a Ferrari F430. And if you guys don't know, he's a very famous Formula One driver. At one point, his son was in Formula One last year or 2 years ago, and they did an interview with all the drivers saying, if you could be a character in a movie, who would you want to be? And his son said, I wanted to be the Ferrari in the Cars movie. His dad was in a really bad accident in 2010, I think, and he is not able to talk. And so it's really, he gets to hear his dad's voice in this movie. Aww. So it's really cool that Michael Schumacher is in this movie, because he was at the top of his game in 2006. And he is truly representing the Ferrari team here, which is like,
wow.
I know.
Ugh.
Chills. Some other fun ones. Again, we're going to bring us down. I'm going to bring us right back up. Mia and Tia, the twins that we see in this, are 1992 Mazda MX-5s NA. Now, it's important that we call that they are the MX-5 NA, because the NA version of the car has the retractable headlights that allow them to flash, Lightning McQueen, versus the Mazda MX-5 NB does not have the retractable one. So they are specifically the retractable headlight version of this car so that they can flash Lightning McQueen, which, like,
listen, there are a few dirty jokes in this movie. I point them out in my movie notes.
Yeah.
We will get to them, but, like, dang, Pixar.
Yeah. That's pretty racy. And finally, in kind of like specific character cars, Jay Leno has a cameo in this movie. And for those of you who don't know, Jay Leno is a huge car enthusiast. Now, when I say a huge car enthusiast, his collection consists of over 181 cars and 160 motorcycles and is worth well over $52 million alone on his car collection.
Whoa.
There's a reason he's in this movie as the talk show person, because he loves cars, preserving cars, and rebuilding cars.
Did not know that.
Ironically, he is a Lincoln Town Car. He does not own a Lincoln Town Car that I could find. He does own a Lincoln Continental, but he does not own the Town Car. So I did find that slightly ironic. I was kind of hoping they would use one of his cars in this. He might have one and it's just not in his collection, but yeah, they use a Lincoln Town Car for Jay Leno.
But call him Jay Limo.
Yeah, and it's not even a limo. God, there's
right.
Go for the pun, but go for the right pun, you know?
What I found specifically interesting about the animation of the cars. So there was a very popular, I think it was a Chevron commercial around this time. Yeah. That were animated cars, but the eyes were the headlights. Instead, in this movie, their eyes are the windshield. And the Pixar animators decided to do that so that the characters would be more expressive. And this idea was largely influenced by the Disney cartoon Susie the Little Blue Coupe from 1952.
Oh.
Yes.
Interesting. I did not see that.
I know. I found that very interesting because, yeah, you would naturally think that the eyes are the headlights, but you're looking at these cars and they're definitely able to do a lot more with the entire windshield as the eyes, make them more expressive. And I particularly love that any car with a grill, it just looks like a mustache. That's really entertaining. Can't do that with the eyes being the headlights. But anyway,
So for the sake of time, just so you guys all know, maybe we'll share this in like one of our little images. I did do a roundup of the specific cars for each car in Radiator Spring, what year and model every single car is. Because again, these were not chosen at random. These are not just like generic cars. Every single car that has a role in this movie has a reason that it is that car. So for the sake of time, I don't think we're going to do that. I do think we'll probably share that information out, because what I do want to talk about just ever so briefly, I want to talk about NASCAR. And like, I know you guys. Some of you are like, NASCAR, Rachel. Yes. Okay. Look, I don't really watch NASCAR either. However, NASCAR is truly an American sport. And if you don't believe me, buckle up and we're going to listen to the origins of NASCAR.
Let's go.
So NASCAR is an abbreviation, in case you didn't know, for the National Association for Stock Car Auto Racing. And it was founded in 1948 and it has its roots in Prohibition. So that is why this is truly an American thing, because what else is more American than trying to figure out how to smuggle alcohol than, you know, NASCAR? So stock cars, by definition, I've now said stock car like 1,000 times, and you're probably wondering, what is a stock car? Why do you keep saying stock car when they're race cars? there is a difference. There's a big difference between a race car and a stock car. So stock cars, by definition, are cars that have not been modified from their original factory condition. So this is different from a race car, which is special custom built and designed for racing purposes. So a Formula One car, that is a race car. An Indy car, that is a race car. The idea behind NASCAR is that it's supposed to be a car that people could buy. That is where this original idea is. There was this old saying when the Plymouth won, I want to say in like the 50s, which was win on Sunday, sell on Monday. Cars that would win would then, oh, it's Oldsmobile. So sorry. They would see an uptick in Oldsmobile sales if the Oldsmobile won NASCAR in their race because of how stock cars are perceived, that these are cars that you can buy. So like I said, this comes from Prohibition, because during Prohibition, you needed to have cars that looked like normal cars, but that were modified in some way so that they could transport whiskey. So these drivers had normal looking cars, and as kind of a thing of pride, because, you know, men, they decided to race each other. And that's where the origin of NASCAR comes from, is having these regular looking cars racing each other. Side note, they got a lot of whiskey in the car as well. So that's our origin of how we get to racing in the United States.
Fascinating.
So, well, and so talking about those 1948 requirements, so basically people saw this happening with those Prohibition cars and they were like, we can make money off this. And so it kind of really did start in like Daytona. Like, let's be honest, people, like when you think of NASCAR, where do we think? We think Daytona, we think Talladega, we think like those types of places. And that is where it started. The South is kind of where it started. But going to 1948, so they had some requirements for the cars in 1948. Any car that was entered must be made entirely of parts available to the general public through car dealers. And the cars had to be models that sold over 500 units to the public. So again, these are not specialty cars. These are cars that any layman could go and get the parts and create these cars. And in fact, people who were drivers in the early days of NASCAR would drive their car that they would be racing in to the track and then go ahead and race on it. So back in the day, that's where we get this idea of stock cars. And that's why we see Lightning and Chick and the King, they all kind of look like real cars, because that's what stock car racing is. It's supposed to look like a sedan, basically. It's just a souped up sedan, but it's a sedan nonetheless.
I did not know that. That is fascinating.
I am here to give the racing facts. I have
loved that.
Thank you. I have three just random facts about NASCAR slash this movie. One, this movie starts because there's a tie. There's a three-way tie at the top of the points. It wasn't until 2011 that there was a tie ever in NASCAR. So at this time, this has never happened. So the fact that this happens in this movie and that they go and they do a tiebreaker race, that had never happened in the history of NASCAR before. It happened in 2011 and it was a big, big deal. So it was between Tony Stewart, and he tied with Carl Edwards for the most points in the full 36 race season, including the playoffs. Yes, racing, or NASCAR specifically, has playoffs. We're not getting into that. So they each had 2,403 points. So they did actually have to do a tiebreaker race. So the fact that this happens in the movie is completely accurate to what they ended up doing if there was ever a tiebreaker in NASCAR. It just had not happened at the time that the movie happened, which is kind of crazy that they came up with this idea and it happened 5 years later.
That's crazy.
Right?
That is crazy. Wow.
And so the whole thing is that Lightning McQueen wants to be the first rookie to win the Piston Cup. We've never had a rookie win. It wasn't until 2014 that a rookie won a NASCAR National Series title, and that was Chase Elliott. Before then, the rookies had not won any NASCAR titles. So it would have been crazy had Lightning done it. Again, he would have done it before any time in history had a rookie win.
That's fascinating.
Right?
Yeah.
My last thing about racing is just I was intrigued by the Motor Speedway of the South that this movie kicks off at. So it's actually based off of three different NASCAR ovals. You have the Bristol Motor Speedway, the Dover Motor Speedway, and Martinsville Speedway. But it also resembles the Atlanta Motor Speedway before it was remodeled in March of 1997. So they got inspiration from there. And then the scoring pylon that we see, that is very accurate that those exist at speedways. And that is based at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So they are pooling that, where you saw all of those cars that you were talking about earlier. Those are all based on real racetracks that they just basically combined together to make the Motor Speedway of the South.
I personally was more intrigued by what is the California Motor Speedway, because to me, it looked like a combination of the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum. So
yeah, I should have looked into that. To me, I was assuming, though it's not the right track, I was assuming it's Long Beach. It's definitely not Long Beach that it is. Long Beach is a very famous track. It's not that. It did look like the Rose Bowl. 100%. Yes, that's the Rose Bowl with the racetrack in it.
Correct. Now, a beloved series I do on these episodes, it's now time for that. Actor facts.
Hey, actor facts.
Okay. Surprisingly, I didn't find that many for Owen Wilson as Lightning McQueen. Shocked. I will say that it was very unusual, but the Pixar team were very heavily reliant on their big names to sell this movie, to market this movie. And that is really not something that Pixar usually does, unlike other animation companies, which do rely heavily on their voice talent. But for some reason, they decided to really sell Owen Wilson and Paul Newman. I will first talk about Owen Wilson. So Lightning McQueen was really designed to be a cocky, arrogant, yet likable character. So to that effect, the animators looked at real people for inspiration, and I got some very interesting names all across the internet that inspired this character, but most notably, Joe Namath, Muhammad Ali, Kid Rock, and Michael Jordan were the names that stuck out to me the most. But this was actually Owen Wilson's first theatrically released animated film. And later he would go on to reprise his role as Lightning McQueen in both Cars 2 and 3, as well as voicing Coach Skip in Fantastic Mr. Fox, Reggie in Freebirds, and Ricky the Dragon in The Hero of Color City. And his performance for Lightning McQueen earned him a nomination for Favorite Movie Animated Voice in the 2012 People's Choice Awards. Obviously not for this movie, for a sequel. But that was pretty much all I could find about Owen Wilson in this role. And I thought, I hadn't seen this movie in a bit, and I thought it was going to be challenging for me to like take my his voice out of it and really be into the character. But I did not find that to be the case. I think at the beginning, as you're hearing him, you're like, yes, of course, obviously this is Owen Wilson. But as the movie went on, I was able to differentiate him as the character of Lightning McQueen. And I think he did a wonderful job.
I agree. As like someone who this is his first voice acting credit, that's hard to do. It's hard to not sound like yourself when you have such a distinct voice. And I agree. Once you get into the movie at first, like speed, like, yeah, okay, it sounds like him. But once you get into the movie, he does a very, very good job being Lightning McQueen.
For sure. Now, our next voice actor that I'm going to cover is Paul Newman as Doc Hudson.
Iconic. Can we just
Oh, he is iconic. Yeah. I was going to wait until after, but cheers to the iconic Paul Newman.
Mm-hmm.
So this was Paul Newman's last American feature film before he sadly died of lung cancer in 2008. And it turned out to be the highest grossing movie of his whole career. I know.
He's so good.
He considered his performance as Doc to be the best that he had done since The Verdict, which was in 1982.
Oh.
And
He was known as a skilled race car driver, owner, and enthusiast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have some quotes from John Lasseter, and normally I wouldn't highlight them, but I think that they're really sweet, so I'm going to bring them up. In June 2017, Entertainment Weekly reported that during the voice actor recording process for this movie, Lasseter spent a lot of time in the recording booth with Paul Newman, who often regaled him with stories about his life and his many years as a race car driver. Lasseter said, "In a way, he mentored me in racing because car racing was his true life's passion, and I made sure that whenever he came into the recording booth, we were recording everything. In between takes, he would tell me stories about great races, and you could hear the passion in his voice. These recordings eventually became what made it possible for the character of Doc Hudson to reappear in Cars 3, even though it was released 8 years after he had passed away." Lasseter goes on to say, "As we started Cars 3, we went back to every recording that we did on Cars 1 and cataloged, listened to all of it, and ended up with a lot of material that we could use, lines that were cut from the original film, as well as some of those pieces from in-between takes." So I love that they did that for Paul Newman. Our next voice actor is Larry the Cable Guy as Mater. Hysterical. You know, we got to follow up the sad heartwarming with the ridiculous. Oh, so yeah. This was Larry the Cable Guy's first animated film. During the final race, we hear him say, "Get her done," which was Larry's most famous line. But I will say that the character of Mater is based on a real-life NASCAR enthusiast. So the country bumpkin tow truck Mater got his name from NASCAR superfan Douglas Mater Kiever, whom the filmmakers met while on a research trip to North Carolina's Lowe's Motor Speedway, which is now called the Charlotte Motor Speedway. Kiever has a voice cameo in the film as the motorhome who says, "Well, dip me in axle grease and call me slick." And that was an improvised line, which was originally, "Well, dip me in axle grease and call me lubrication."
Nope, don't like that.
Lovely producer Darla Anderson opted to change it because maybe she thought it sounded sexual. "I don't know," said Kiever. God bless you, Darla. Because I would not have wanted to hear the word lubrication in a Pixar film.
This is why, you know what? It's March. It's Women's Month right now. This is why you need women in the room. This is why you need women in the room.
I think I will just call out one more person. And who? Okay. This is the first time that I have watched this movie since binging all of Entourage with Adam. So immediately, I recognized Jeremy Piven as Harvey the Agent, and I freaking love it so much. It is such a perfect role for him. I love that you never see what he looks like. Makes it even funnier. But, oh, so good. Love Jeremy Piven. He's such a good voice. But yes, as Rachel said, in the UK version, he was replaced by Jeremy Clarkson, the Top Gear co-host, which makes sense. And they did like a lot of swaps for other
I was going to bring that up. That so a this doesn't necessarily apply to this movie, but in the later Cars movie, again, I've talked about my love for Formula One. They have the different drivers play different roles in the Cars movie. So Lewis Hamilton plays a role. Fernando Alonso plays a role. Carlos Sainz plays a role. You have all of these different actual drivers that rotate through depending on who they're trying to be. So they do change out some cameo voice actors depending on the country that it's being released in.
Yes, specifically in this movie, in Germany, the King, who is voiced by Richard Petty in the US release, in Germany, he is voiced by Formula One champion Niki Lauda. And in Spain, he is voiced by Formula One's Fernando Alonso.
Hold up. I did not see that Niki Lauda voices the King. Oh my gosh. One, like,
RIP Niki Lauda, an incredible, incredible driver. I knew Fernando Alonso was in it, but Niki Lauda is one of the greatest drivers that there ever has been. So for him to have, like, that makes sense because Richard Petty is one of the greatest NASCAR drivers. So to have, like, Fernando Alonso, I mean, he's great, don't get me wrong, but, like, he's not on the same level as Niki Lauda and Richard Petty. So I did not know that he did that voice in the German version. So thank you.
You're so welcome. That makes me really happy. And I think that that's a good way to go into our little break before we talk about the movie itself.
Perfect.
We'll be right back.
We are back. Our glasses are full. Well, mine's real full. And we are going to go ahead and get into our movie. And I think this opening for a movie is, dare I say, I'm sorry, but it is iconic. I think
you need to. It is iconic. Iconic. Cheers to that. Cheers to that.
With my full glass.
But I will say, as I mentioned before our break, hearing Owen Wilson, all I could think was, wow.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, this was. You were going to talk about the wine. I'm sorry. I cut you off.
Oh, no, I wasn't. I was going to talk about the monologue, is what I was going to talk about.
Whoops.
But so we get into this monologue, and again, Racer Rachel over here, the RR, starts thinking. So he's getting into his headspace, which any driver does pre-race. However, we hear him say the line, one loser, nope, yikes, one winner, 42 losers. That means there's 43 cars in a race. Now, let me tell you what. I have never seen a race with 43 cars. One, an odd number of cars is bizarre to begin with. Like, let's just put that aside.
Wait, hold on. Did he say one winner, 43 losers, or one winner, 42 losers? Oh, that is weird.
I know. I mean, it's nice in the theory of when you're saying it, one winner, you got that with an even number. Like, I think that's probably the writers doing that. But odd number, 43 cars.
No, be accurate. But that sounds like a lot of cars.
That's a lot. So I did check. Formula One, I will tell you with my eyes closed, that has 20 cars, period, in a Formula One race. Sure. So it is a lot. NASCAR varies, but I saw anywhere from 30 to 36. Either way, still not 43 cars. Still a lot of cars. I was like, 36?
That's a lot of cars.
But still not 43 cars on the track at any given time. No wonder there's a giant accident. And that's a huge pile up because we have 43 cars on the track at any given time.
Something that I did love about this track in particular is the song playing in the background, which is Real Gone by Sheryl Crow. Love that song. We'll listen to it on repeat when it comes up in my Disney playlist. It is so good. I love the soundtrack and the score of this film. And I'm a little bit sad you didn't look into it, but that's okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, you guys. I had to go with my heart here.
Other things I noticed and notes I'm going to call out are OMG, the Lightyear blimp. Great.
Yep.
Instead of the Goodyear blimp. The wave with the headlights. Great.
Yep.
Amazing. The bathroom lines made me laugh hysterically and definitely made me think of when we went to the Eras Tour.
Anyway, with that being said, they also have, I have two more things. So you said the Lightyear blimp, which ties into the Lightyear tires, which is pretty accurate for NASCAR, not accurate currently for Formula One. They use Pirelli tires, as we all know. But I do want to tie back because I did say that 95 is Lightning McQueen's number, but it was supposed to be 57. However, I never said why it's 95. So I think this is a pretty good time to say why he's number 95. If you guys don't know already, that is the year that Toy Story came out. So we are, instead of doing an homage to John Lasseter, we're doing an homage to Pixar instead.
Yay! Good call, everybody.
Yay.
Then my next note, Rachel, he's not going into the pit. Please tell our listeners why this is a bad idea.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you asked because I wrote a whole blurb about that. So a couple of different things. when there's a safety car, which we see the yellow flag being waved. We see a yellow car come out that represents a crash. There's a safety car. They got to clean it up and everyone's going to reduce their speed if they're still going. If you are not involved in the crash, this is a fantastic time to go into the pits because everybody's speed is lower. So you lose less time in the pit lane than you would if everyone's going at full speed. So it saves you a lot of time. So Lightning not going into the pits is quite a choice. It is a very stupid choice because all races, you do have to pit at some point. In Formula One, you have to have at least two different tires, which means you have to get your tires changed at one point. Oh. I'll talk about, like, so when he doesn't get his tires, that was a dumb choice because you have to have different tires. He does need to get fuel, so he has to go in at some point. But not going into pit, absolutely bad choice because you're going to lose more time once everybody gets cleared up and the safety car goes in.
As we see, because he blows two tires.
So that's unreal. Like, you would know that your tires are having issues. The likelihood of them just popping is very rare. You would know, you'd feel bald spots. You won't go as fast. You'll be slowing down. However, do want to just call out that Lewis Hamilton most certainly did win at Silverstone with only three tires. So it is not impossible to do. Lewis Hamilton is currently the GOAT of Formula One, and he was able to win on three tires. So it's not impossible. Two, he couldn't do it, but when he blew the one, it's like it still could have been done.
We see the race ends in a tie, three-way tie, as Lightning McQueen sticks his tongue out to cry. So good. So funny. So we also are seeing all of these like press junkets happening.
Yep.
And I do appreciate that Pixar is teaching us about science. You know what comes after thunder? Lightning.
Like Chick's response. He's like, did anybody know that? Like, That was a really good zing. But yeah, we do get these vignettes and we see how much of a douche Lightning McQueen is. And like, to put it blunt, he is an absolute douche. And I get wanting to be cocky and be proud of your abilities and everything, but there's a fine line and he's well over that line into douchebag.
Oh, 100%. I wrote "what a schmuck" several times in my notes because accurate.
Yeah.
Who are not schmucks are the lovely, precious Dinoco couple. Yeah. Love them. And yeah. Richard Petty's wife voices his wife in the movie. Love
it's
that.
It's so sweet. Linda it's Petty. So sweet.
He's trying to get through to Lightning. Like, hey, you're an idiot. Like, you're good, but here's how you can be better. And Lightning's just off in his own little la-la land, blah, 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 blah. Then we find out it is a tie. They all have to make their way over to California in 1 week. And Lightning is trying to scoot the F out of there before he has to go into his sponsor tent, which is Rusty's Medicated Bumper Ointment, yuck, AKA like it's hemorrhoid cream, which makes me laugh hysterically.
Yuck.
I love the sponsors here. They are voiced by some hosts of NPR's radio show Car Talk, Tom and Ray Malozzi. They have some very not PG lines back and forth here. First of all, we have already seen the flashing, which yikes. But here is where we get one brother saying race cars don't need headlights. The track is always lit. And the other brother says, yeah, well, so is my brother, but he still needs headlights. Cheers.
Cheers. It's us. Look at that.
And off to California we go.
Absolutely. So we get our montage with Life is a Highway by Rascal Flatts. And if that song doesn't make you think of this movie, you're doing life wrong. Because if you correct, hear this song, you should only think of this movie.
This whole montage, gorgeous. Then he gets a call from his agent, Harv, which is such an amazing scene. Several things happen. First of all, Harv gets a cut to all of Lightning's ancillary rights in perpetuity. Wow, what a Lightning fucking stupid contract.
Yeah, why did Lightning sign this contract? Oh my God. hysterical. But also he says, Lightning, babe, you're my mishpucha. And I'm like, oh, because of course, Ari Gold, a.k.a. Harv, a.k.a. Jeremy Piven, is Jewish.
But I'm curious, and I did not look this up. What does Jeremy Clarkson say?
Oh, I don't know.
If anybody knows, please tell. I'm going to go YouTube it after we finish recording this. But if anyone knows, let us know. Because I want, there's no way Jeremy Clarkson says that. There's no way. That's very wrong. He should not be saying that.
But let us continue. So they're on the road. Mac is tired, obviously. And it says last rest stop for 500 miles. And Lightning, the schmuck that he is, says, nope. Keep going. Jerk, you're not driving.
Mac starts going into, well, federal regulations say, the DOT says that truck drivers need to take rest every so amount of time. And Lightning cuts him off and says, you can rest basically when we get to California. So keep going. I am horrible at driving at night. I'll do long road trips. I've been like, okay, but I need to be asleep by 8 p.m. I cannot imagine driving through the night the way that is doing. So no wonder he starts dozing off and gets even more dozing off when we have the tuning squad coming up on him and noticing he's dozing and starts playing a lullaby for him to just fuck with him, because that's what those types of hot rod drivers do. They're gonna fuck with you if they see you sleeping on the road.
I love them, especially love them later on in the after credit scenes. Yep. But I write, thus begins the comedy of errors leading to Radiator Springs.
Yes, that's a perfect way to describe it.
And now we are in Radiator Springs. I'm just going to fast forward. And, you know, Lightning's going really fast and he's about to get pulled over by a cop. But, you know, Sheriff has not gone so fast in a really long time. So his car backfires. Lightning thinks he's being shot at. What?
Serpentine. Do guns exist in the Cars universe? I have 5 million questions about the Cars universe that maybe I will go into in some kind of a bonus episode, but what? Clearly they do, because clearly he does think that they're getting shot at. So they do obviously exist, or else he would not have that cognitive thought. What they look like, we don't need to get into. But yes, I mean, I definitely heard a car backfiring and I'm like, what's happening? Is it about tasks right now?
Correct.
So, I mean, it makes sense that he does assume that, because that sound.
It makes sense, but also, how can they shoot? They have wheels, not opposable thumbs. Anyway, so we get into Radiator Springs. I write in my notes, hey, look, it's DCA, because God, is it a perfect replica?
My notes literally say it is insane how much they made Cars Land look like the movie. I like rewatching this movie. It's been a while since I saw the movie. It is a perfect replica.
It's absolutely perfect. No, shout out to the Imagineers that put together Cars Land at DCA, because oh my God, is it perfect.
We've seen the redesign of Toontown. We saw Pandora in Disney World. We've seen Marvel Land, nothing, Galaxy's Edge, nothing compares to what you see when you see Cars Land in DCA. It is perfect.
But now we see Mac has made it to California and Lightning is not there. And we see a bunch of news coverage, including Japanese television, Jay Limo, and OMG, remember the time that Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of California and they have him as a Hummer?
He's a Humvee, actually. Sorry not to be pedantic, but I will be. But I mean, that was one. I'm so happy that it's captured forever now in history that happened for us. And two, that is a really good way to capture him in the Cars universe.
It was perfect. He was not voiced by actual Arnold Schwarzenegger, but that's okay. Lightning wakes up. It is the next day and we meet Mater. And I love
Mater without the ta.
And Mater and the sheriff take Lightning to traffic court. LOL. Love that so very much. And it is here that we are introduced to our full cast of Radiator Springs characters. And I love all of them so very much. And Lightning is sentenced to fix the road. We meet our judge, who is Doc Hudson. And Doc wants to have Lightning get the fuck out of here. Yep. But Sally, our beautiful Portia, comes in and says, uh-uh, he's got to fix this shit before he leaves. So that's what we are at. He has to use old Bessie to repave the road and make it drivable. And I love all of the characters of Radiator Springs. So now we have Lightning is trying to speed his way through his job and completely fucks up the road, right? Yeah. So Doc says to him, I will race you. If Doc wins, then Lightning has to fix the road. If Lightning wins, he can go on his way. Here are the rules to said race. No bumping, no cheating, no spitting, no biting, no road rage, no maiming, no oil slicking, no pushing, no shoving, no backstabbing, no road hogging, and no lollygagging.
Which technically, I would like to just say,
Doc was lollygagging.
He was lollygagging. Like, he just should have just gone slowly. Like, to stop completely, Doc broke the rules. So in that case, Lightning technically, I would say, wins by default, or neither of them do. They do a rematch. Like, Doc.
Yeah, neither of them won. Doc does not make a lap.
I mean, I'm sure he does. Lightning, and then he goes and finishes the lap. But either way, he lollygagged. Doesn't count.
Yes, we do get a wonderful line here that Lightning says that is based off of Muhammad Ali. Float like a Cadillac, sting like a Beamer.
Love it. I love that line. So Lightning does begrudgingly do the pavement. He recognizes he loses, so he begrudgingly does it, but he runs out of asphalt after that, and instead of escaping, he decides that he's going to try and figure out how he lost. He doesn't understand. Like, again, in Lightning's head, he is such a self-centered that he cannot understand why he couldn't make that turn. So instead of fleeing, he uses the gas that he has to try and learn. And we see him attempting and still failing to make that turn.
Yes, but here is where we start to see Lightning bond with our other characters. First, we see him kind of having a little flirty flirt action with Sally. He notices her pinstriping tattoo. And now Mater is about to take him tractor tipping. But also cow tipping is like really mean. Like these poor cows.
I grew up in kind of a rural area. Like, literally behind my house is a dang farm where I grew up and my parents live. Like, I grew up in a rural area. I do not understand why anybody in their right mind would choose to tip cow. I get when he talks later about like mailboxes and stuff like that. Okay. I get it. Okay. But like, tipping cows, tipping tractors.
It's mean. It's really so hard to get a cow back up.
Yeah. And they're just sleeping. They're just little sleeping.
Poor little cows. But here is where we learn, though, that not only does Lightning not have headlights, as made evident by Sally's nickname, Stickers, he also does not have a horn.
He does not have a horn. And after this scene, after they get chased by Frank, we find out that he doesn't know how to drive backwards. Which I think is very, very funny. And I like that they included this, that he does not have mirrors, so he cannot drive backwards.
But I have a question. If in NASCAR racing, they are supposed to be stock cars, shouldn't he have all of these things that are stuck on a car.
Yeah, he should. Well, again, remember, he is a hybrid between a stock car and a Le Mans car. However, all race cars, because you have to be able to see if there's a car behind you, if you're going to be cutting, if you're going to be like preventing an overtake, whatever it is, you need to see if there's a car. So all cars, regardless if they're a stock car or a race car, do indeed have side mirrors. And I do think that that's a funny thing to not include. Even if he is a hybrid between Le Mans and stock, he should still have rear view mirrors.
A lot of questions, but I do love that this particular scene is the inspiration for Mater's Junkyard Jamboree, which is a great ride.
So much fun. Go on it if you've never been on. If you think it's a silly ride and you've never been on it, go on it.
It is a silly ride and it will make you laugh the whole time.
Yes.
Now we have the next morning. We have Lightning going, trying to find the sheriff so he can begin his day. He goes into docks. He sees underneath the sheriff, get a good peek. Oh, ho, ho. And then he casually stumbles into Doc's shed of things, which include three piston cups. And he's like, what? And now we find out Doc's backstory and why he hates race cars so much.
And like, I get it. There have been times, not so much recently, that bad accidents have occurred and people have turned their back. This is why I thought it was crazy. Niki Lauda had a really, really, really bad accident. And instead of people turning their backs on him, they welcomed him and they wanted to keep him in racing. He was a huge part of the Mercedes team for a really, really long time up until his passing. So this is really sad that that's Doc's experience, because I will say that's not the experience that a lot of people would experience in reality. So that is more a movie than reality.
I am glad to hear that that is not the reality. But now Sally offers to take Lightning for a drive. And here is where we get the musical sequence that plays on Radiator Springs Racers. And
can we cheers to Randy Newman for doing this score? Randy. Because it is iconic.
So good. It is so iconic. Good. Cheers, Randy Newman.
Randy.
To all the Newmans in this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they related?
I do not believe they are.
Okay.
So Sally takes Lightning on a drive. We eventually go to Wheel Well, which was starts to explain the past of Route 66. And again, having the context of going on this drive through California, Arizona, Utah, New Mexico, and Texas, I really related to all of this, and everything that Sally was talking about felt very real, and it actually made me want to do it again, which I had said I never wanted to do that drive again. It was such a long trip. But I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe I do. But so Sally starts to talk about the idea of Radiator Springs in its heyday being along Route 66 was incredible. People were taking their time. They're driving through. Everyone kind of had a place to stop, and everyone took life at a much slower pace. And then highways started, interstates started. And in doing that, while it sounded like this really exciting thing, it started to wipe these small towns off the map because people weren't taking the slower pace. In fact, today you cannot drive the entirety of Route 66. It's not a thing that can happen. You can drive parts of Route 66, but the entirety from Chicago to LA, you cannot drive that anymore. And so knowing that, this really like hits this moment, and it is a sad, sad scene in this movie.
Not only do you have this sad subject matter, you also have James Taylor singing in the background to just slowly soothe you as you're sobbing.
Which, I don't know how they got James Taylor. I kind of do wish I looked into the music to know how they got James Taylor.
Damn it, Rachel.
I'm sorry. But it is a really emotional scene, and I truly do like it. And it does actually shift. Finally, we get a true shift in Lightning's personality after he gets this experience, after he sees what they all went through.
So Doc shares his backstory with Lightning, and Lightning is obviously very upset. It is the next morning. Lightning has finished the road, and everyone thought he just like took off, but oh no, he's turned a new leaf, and now he's going to give everybody in Radiator Springs some lovely business. He's going to try the organic fuel. Oh, getting a paint job from Ramon, some new white tires from Luigi. Anyway, he is wonderful. And he also fixes the neon, and it plays exactly how it plays at DCA during sunset. It's, the chills.
Oh,
so again, good.
It had been a while since I saw this movie, and like I've been in DCA more frequently or like more recently than I have seen this movie. So I knew what they do to turn on the neon. And when it happened in the movie, I swear to God, I got chills. I was just like, same. This is it. That like, and it sounds so silly, but like I actually was, because you can experience it, and you, again, no other land in any Disney park that I've been a part of, you've been to more on your Japan trip, but no other land has such an immersive feeling that you are in this movie as Radiator Springs in Cars Land.
It's so good. But as they're all having this heartwarming moment, there all of a sudden comes a giant media frenzy. Helicopters, cars, Mac. Turns out Doc has called the paparazzi and let them know where Lightning is. And everything in Radiator Springs kind of just goes back to normal. And it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Cut two, we are now in, as I wrote, Pasadena?
Question mark?
And we've learned that Chick, who is voiced by Michael Keaton. Has taken on the catchphrase Kachika, and I hate it. It does
Kachika,
not work.
Kachika.
No, does not work.
No.
Kachow?
Yes.
Kachika? Absolutely fucking not.
Well, in that time, he spent his time wooing Dinoco. He's gotten the twins, Mia and Tia, to now be Chick fans rather than Lightning fans. Those
disloyal bitches.
You know what? They're fickle, okay? They're fickle. So we get to our pre-race prep. And then as we're doing our prep, I literally wrote, oh my God, and Mario Andretti is in this movie too? Where does it end? That is an actual thing that I wrote sober, might I add. Mario Andretti, again, very famous racer. So the fact that he's also in this movie is crazy. But as Lightning's doing his same pre-race prep, athletes have a way that they prep for races. We see him trying to do it again. And every time he tries to get ready, he starts thinking about Radiator Springs, and he starts thinking about his friends. And all of a sudden, he's in the formation lap. So before a race starts, it's called the formation lap. You get everybody, you kind of get this warm-up lap on the race, and that is what's going on. And so all of a sudden the race starts, and he's already on the track because he was in that. And oh crap, I gotta actually focus on what's going on here. And he falls behind because he was very distracted.
Understandably so. And what pulls him out of this distraction? Why, it is his friends from Radiator Springs who've come to be his pit crew.
I love it
so much.
Yeah, so I was going to say, so we have his pit crew, and so Lightning is actually down a little bit, and he needs to get into the pits, he needs to talk to them, and he needs to beat the safety car back out. And so this was a little weird thing. So a couple of notes. I said I'd talk about the swerving. I'm going to talk about that right now.
Great.
The reason that race cars, will swerve back and forth is they're keeping their tires warm. The last thing you want to do is to cool down your tires. In fact, tires sit in warming blankets before they are put on the cars. So they stay at a temperature, so the pressure stays where they need it to stay so that you can have the best performance happen from a car. So when everybody slows down, in theory, that would bring tire temperature down. So if you swerve, you're going to keep that air in the tires, and you're going to keep keep it warm. And so you're going to keep the tire pressure where you need it to be. So that's where that comes from.
Fascinating.
Right? So Lightning comes in and there's this talk about, is he going to get out and beat the safety car, basically? Right. Now, he does. And so that way he doesn't lose a lap, because if he got out behind them, he'd be a lap down. So instead, he does indeed get up in front of them, which allows him to go around and catch up to get to the back. But I will say, he'd probably get in trouble. He looked like he sped out of the pit lane, which you should not be allowed to do. Like, you have to have, they're called deltas. You have to stay at a certain speed within entering the pits and leaving the pits. He looks like he sped up and cheated a little bit. We'll give him it. But it allowed him to get to the back, so that way he's not down an entire lap from the rest of the group.
It adds to the suspense. It yes. also allowed us to see the amazingness that is Guido and his speed.
Okay, Guido. Okay, again, sorry. But
my guy.
So
my guy.
In NASCAR, you do have to refill gas. However, in Formula One, as Guido shows, you only do tires. Now, the world record for the fastest pit stop was done by McLaren very recently. It was a 1.9 second pit stop to change all tires. I do believe, again, this just happened in the 2023 season. I believe at that time, Guido probably would have set the record for the fastest pit stop. So one final thing about this, the lead pit stop or the lead mechanic on the Ferrari team has a Guido tattoo right there. No joke. The lead mechanic on the Ferrari team, you can see it every single race, aww, has a true Guido tattoo on his arm. And it makes me smile 100% of the time.
I love that. So we have established Lightning may have cheated to get back into the race on time, but that's okay. What happens is Lightning is very ahead of his competitors. But what does Chick do? Because he's not losing to some old fogey who's racing his last race ever. Yeah, Rachel's giving middle fingers to those of you who can't see. And I agree. He makes the king crash horribly. And Lightning sees this and comes to a very abrupt stop right before the finish line. Rachel's raising her hand. Yes, Rachel.
Now, again, if this was an actual race, if you did an intentional crash, even if it wasn't necessarily intentional, if you did a crash like that, you would have a penalty attached to you. So the fact sure. that Chick goes through, zero penalty, still wins, there's no way in hell that would actually happen in real life. He would have a penalty that would affect his time, that would make him slower than everybody else. He'd have to pay a giant ass fine. There is no way that Chick just wins this race after doing something crazy like this. I mean, I can suspend disbelief. It's a world of cars. I get it. But like, I draw the line somewhere, and intentionally crashing a pier is where I draw that line.
I very much approve of where you're drawing the line.
Thank you.
But Chick does cross the finish line first. Lightning goes back and makes sure that the king crosses his finish line of his last race. And he says, like, but you lost the race. Like, what are you doing? He's like, well, it's just an empty cup. And am I crying at a bunch of anthropomorphized cars right now? You yep. bet your ass I am.
Yep. Yep. I was like, in my notes, it's like, do I say to you guys that I'm crying right now? Because I am. Yes.
100%. But even though Chick wins the race, everybody is fawning over this amazing gesture that Lightning did to allow the king to cross first, let him finish his last race. Dynaco comes over, offers him the sponsorship. He turns it down because he's like, you know what? No, the Rusty's guys got me to where I am. I owe it to them. Like, hell yes, you do. Yeah. And he does, though, ask for the favor to give Mater a helicopter ride, which is the only thing that Mater ever wanted. And I freaking love it. And now cut back to Radiator Springs, where we have a couple Ferraris that pop into Luigi's Tire Store.
Look, okay, if you are a fan of Ferrari, you've been following Ferrari, you have your own tire store, and Michael Schumacher walks in, says, I was told this is the place to get tires. I would have the exact same response as Luigi and Guido, and I would pass out as well. Because again, these are these small town people. Nobody comes there. And so to have one of the greatest drivers of all time come in saying that they want to give you business because they were told you were the best. It is a beautiful, beautiful moment, like in the movie, in person, and everything. I was smiling from ear to ear.
But anyway, it ends with Lightning and Sally parked beneath the tree about to kiss and roll credits. But first, we have the amazing thing that Pixar does, which is they've done bloopers, but now let's give us some like end credit scenes. Love this. Love this.
This is so good.
Oh my God. Amazing. I'm going to call it a few. First of all, the lowriders, our neon lowriders coming back after having been arrested, having to go through boot camp. Great. The Hummer saying, yo, I've never been off-road, which is very funny because most Hummer owners did not take their Hummers off-road. Great. Then we get a series of Pixar movies as Cars, which you can see the posters for them in Cars Land.
This is one of the most creative things I think they've ever done. Like, hands down.
We have John Ratzenberger, who is an iconic, cheers to him, voice actor for the Pixar movie, who is mixed Pixar movie universe, who is watching all of these other Pixar movies, Toy Car Story, saying, hey, whoever does the voice of this piggy truck, I'm telling you, he's one great actor. Cut to Monster Truck Inc. Oh, that abominable snowplow is quite the comic thespian. Cut to A Bug's Life, and it's a VW bug. Wait a minute here. They're just using the same actor over and over. What kind of cut rate production is this?
I swear. Pixar peaked in this moment right here. This scene is, I was laughing so much.
It's so good. And we end these sequences with a dedication to Joe Ramft and a montage of all of the characters that he has voiced throughout his time at Pixar. And it's very heartwarming. I put a little crying emoji in my notes.
They also, at the end of this, and I watched the credits to the very, 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 very end. Something I really liked that they did is they thanked a lot of businesses along Route 66. Again, they went on a really long expedition across Route 66, and they thanked businesses in Arizona, New Mexico, in Texas. I even think Oklahoma. Like, they thanked businesses all over the Southwest that they probably stopped at, that they talked to, that they got information from. The thanks at the end is worth it alone. If you've never watched the credits for this movie, I really do recommend it. They thank different people from the racing side of things. They thank people from the Route 66 side of things. It is really, really good credits at the end of this movie. So if you've not seen it, I would 10 out of 10 recommend you go and watch the very end of this movie.
Why do I feel like this was not John Lasseter's idea? That it was somebody else's idea. It was definitely not his idea, because gross.
And that's the end of our movie. I loved this. Oh my God, I loved it.
What a great movie. It's arguably one of my favorite Pixar movies. Like,
yeah.
So good. Definitely up there. Yeah. Very, very good.
Yeah.
And it was a really fun movie to come back to this podcast with you, Rachel.
I agree. It's great.
It was so good. And it was fun to be back. I'm very proud of us for picking this right back up. And I'm very excited to keep this rolling.
I do want to say, again, just we mentioned things at the beginning. Life is crazy. Life is very different than when we started this podcast. So these episodes might not come as regularly as they used to, but that does not mean that we don't want to do this. We love this podcast. We love everybody who listens to this podcast. We are going to keep it going. We are not done. We just are trying to adapt to our lives right now.
Listen up. Dear listeners, if this could be both of our full-time jobs and we could make enough money to survive off of this, this would be what we were doing.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we have to have big girl jobs, which are stupid.
Blech.
But that's how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
But whenever we get to our next episode, I unfortunately picked a slightly timely one, but I'll, you know, it's fine. So I love this movie that we just watched, Cars. It's wonderful. It's a great sports movie. And I love me a sports movie. It is currently March, Rachel. And that means a couple of things. Number one, we got St. Patrick's Day coming up. Number two, we got March Madness coming up.
I know what we're doing. I know what we're doing. I know what we're doing. We haven't had a DCOM in a while. I think it's time for the Luck of the Irish.
Oh, gosh.
We have to. It is so...
Oh, it's been a hot minute since I've seen the Luck of the Irish. I cannot wait. I remember the last DCOM we did and how much trouble we had finding some facts. But you know what? Let's just do it. I'm excited.
I'm here for that. I think that is a perfect next movie for us to do. It's still sports, which love me some sports. But more importantly, let's go back to our DCOM roots. It's been a while.
Oh, I love it. On that note, Rachel, I would like to invite you to join me as we raise a glass to our first episode of 2024. Rachel, a very hearty cheers.
Cheers, y'all.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Disney Rewind. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other platforms where podcasts are found.
Connect with us on social media by visiting @DisneyRewind on Instagram and on Facebook.com/DisneyRewind for some fun content and moments mentioned on this episode. For more information about us and our podcast, check out DisneyRewind.com. That is DisneyRewind.com.
Cheers.